Chapter 4, The Origin of Inadequacy, Biographical and Ontological Considerations. Inadequacy is one of the core organizing obstacles for most adults who are desiring to outgrow their autonomy and inhabit their larger complexity and maturity as human beings. As such, we are going to dive into this subject matter now that you've gone through a fairly exhaustive exploration of how the autonomous stage of development takes shape and some of the territory that resides beyond the separate and distinct self. This chapter is likely to save you thousands of dollars on psychotherapy, coaching, and/or personal and professional trainings of many types. So perk up. If you have been pouring resources into trying to resolve your own sense of inadequacy in life, maybe even debilitating inadequacy, this chapter is especially tailored for you. However, if you have managed to distance yourself and negotiate around feeling inadequate with relative success, also pay close attention to this chapter because it is designed for you in mind as well. As you will learn, understanding inadequacy is often an important feature for your larger elegance showing up in and as your life. But first, let's begin with a pivotal session with a client. I was sitting in my office, legs crossed with my hands folded together, resting on my lap across from my client. Sam was wearing a clean, tan, button-down dress shirt and jet black slacks. He was on a break from work, and he looked good. He was clean and crisp in his appearance. His top button was unbuttoned, which added just enough of a hint of casualness to accent his otherwise lean, powerful appearance. He sat alert on the couch. On this day, we were exploring his felt experience of being inadequate, despite his competence and relative mastery in the private and public spheres of life. I kept prodding him to turn the clock backward as we explored his past together. "What is the origin?" I asked again. The room fell silent. He was searching inside himself, looking before some of his earliest memories surrounding his felt inadequacy. His inquiry inside appeared to become more quiet. He felt more still to me, and simultaneously I sensed his uncertainty was growing. The inquiry that I gave to him was working me as well. Despite my years of training graduate students who are in the process of becoming therapists, I had done just what I frequently instruct them not to do. Do not split your own transformation from the growth of your clients. When you change, they change. When you grow, they grow. When you split yourself from your client's work, you often remain fixed. When you are fixed, your client now has his or her own obstacles to work with, as well as the ones you are failing to work with. I asked a question for Sam to work on, and as I offered this inquiry, it was purely for him. I had separated myself from his process. Fortunately, a more evolved facet of myself swept through as I spontaneously picked up and began exploring my own inquiry with him. In the quiet, introspective space, I suddenly had an oh my God moment. I thought I knew where I was headed with Sam. Now I realized I had been deluding myself and my clients for years. My hands released one another as I reached for the arms of my chair. I slowly pressed my hands into the leather and lifted myself into a more upright position. My whole narrative around inadequacy was reshaping and recontextualizing itself before my mind's eye. It was dramatic and fast, maybe 2 or 3 seconds in clock time, but by the end of that second or third tick, I was fundamentally a different human being. Interestingly, Sam looks up at me and starts to describe some of my own recently emerged insight. I can't find anything else before this. I'm looking for what memory precedes me at 3 or 4 years old, but now I just come up with this empty, open, black space. I responded, "This empty, open, black space does appear to be something, though, don't you think?" Sam was looking into his own facets of what I had also experienced as the interrelated flux of experience worked me just moments ago. He just had not connected two important dots yet. Sam nodded his head. "Yes." I posed another question for Sam. "This open space, as you call it, are there any boundaries or limitations?" Sam's attention turned inward. The office became immensely still. It was so profoundly still, it was almost deafening in its silence. I was now inside of the answer to my own question, while also staying attuned to Sam. Sam's breathing was slow. The pauses between breaths were long and appeared to be unmoving in some sense. After a short pause that felt as though time stood still, Sam looked up at me, straightened my eyes, and calmly stated, "No." His presence was powerfully piercing. Next, I found myself asking a question I had literally never before asked, let alone considered before. Yet right now, it made complete sense. Does this empty, open, black space come before your conception? Without missing a beat, Sam responds, "Yes." I continue, coming from being unlimited, perhaps without any boundaries, into form, where you are a finite, limited being in a tenuous world, how would that make you feel? Sam bursts out into laughter. I join him in the hilarity of our shared insight. I'm laughing for his realization as well as my own. I was laughing so hard my eyes were tearing up and I was doubling over in my chair. Soon after, we began collecting ourselves and returned to our conversation. Sam said, "Inadequate. How else could I feel?" And Sam said this with a totally different affect. He now spoke of his inadequacy with a smile on his face and what felt to be in his heart as well. Necessity of biological history and ontological origin. Until Sam and I explored the origins of inadequacy, I had fallen prey to believing that inadequacy was rooted in our biographical histories. By revisiting the experiential intensity of these historical events, you can metabolize and make sense of them in new ways, which often frees you up to function more freely. As it turns out, though, only part of your experiences around inadequacy are due to your biographical history. None of these historical events are the origin. It is not your mother saying something to you or your dad doing this or not that. Inadequacy's origin is not in a sibling giving you some early experience, and it is not at its center due to birth trauma. Reintegrating your memories around your biographical stories and historical experience can bring more insight and some greater resolution to your historical experiences. In fact, creating a more coherent narrative of these facets of your history does appear to be good for your brain and nervous system, as well as your own well-being. However, the experience of inadequacy is likely to continue throughout your lifespan. Why? You are fundamentally inadequate. If you're like most adults, functioning in or around the self-authoring mind, you have likely done one of two things. You have formulated and consolidated a position for yourself inside of the polarity, I am okay or I am not okay. Regardless which side you have chosen, or rather which side has chosen you, your more conventional self is identified with one and is likely consumed in an attempt to fortify your position of either being okay or not being okay, and inhabiting an ongoing struggle with the opposing opposition. When I write, "You are fundamentally inadequate," I am not offering this assertion in response to any biographical narrative. A larger truth that embraces more experiential scope is found in the ontological origins of inadequacy. To understand this, you must first grasp that there are parts of human experience that are limited, finite, bound in time, and always changing. And there are also facets of human experience that are unlimited, infinite, boundless, changeless, and eternal or outside of time. We could say that our relative experiences have everything to do with the facets of our historically unfolding life, while boundless experiences have everything to do with the facets of our experience that are unconditioned. Prior to your conception, you, or some facet of you, was likely embedded in and identified with the unconditioned, boundless, and formless dimensions of experience. Even if you presume that prior to your birth you were nothing. What if this nothing also had subjectivity? If so, you might describe this nothing similar to Sam's description. It's open, black space. When you transition from being boundless into a human form that is bounded, to an immensely limited form, you are likely to feel both a profound and pervasive sense of inadequacy and an ecstatic desire to return back to and once again taste, know, and be that which is unbounded, free from constraints, and unconditioned in the fullest sense of these terms. This transition or contrast between that which is infinite and that which is finite is the ontological origin of inadequacy. You changing from that which is, as Sam puts it, empty, open, black space, which has no limits, to something most notably a small, vulnerable human being, is going to leave a profound experiential texture of you now not being enough. The unfolding of your life, the growth of you through infancy, childhood, adolescence, and throughout adulthood, has been a journey of finding out the myriad of ways in which you are inadequate in response to some demand or demands in your life. And this journey has also been a process of discovering how you can grow and thus meet or exceed the demands life is presenting. Falling short, so to speak, is painful and often instills an experience of being inadequate in some sense. The expansion or growth of you and your capabilities, in contrast, is often pleasurable. So, while the inadequacy of limitation is often painful, the growth process where you outgrow limitations, expand yourself, and what you're capable of often yields tremendous pleasure and joy. At some point in the development beyond your self-directing autonomy, you will outgrow your biographical narrative, which we will explore at length later in chapters 9 and 10. When you do step beyond your historically governed narrative, you will see that many of the experiences surrounding inadequacy are in response to your personal history and can function somewhat independently from your historical conditioning. A more direct energetic experience of inadequacy can be accessed, which we are referring to as your ontological inadequacy. This larger experiential intensity and flavor of inadequacy resides beneath or prior to most, if not all, of your more personal narratives around being good enough or inadequate at various points in life. If you happen to be struggling to find a reference point for what is being discussed in your own experience, you're not alone. The vast majority of adults have not, in an enduring way, outgrown their biographical and chronological narratives. As such, all experiences are attributed to some facet of their history. If this is you, take this into consideration. Your parents were likely struggling with the energy of inadequacy in their own unique ways prior to your conception. Your grandparents had their own energetic relationship with the pleasure of overcoming limitations, along with the guilt of falling short in various ways. Human beings have likely been struggling with inadequacy and its polar experience indefinitely. When you die, your unique expression of this tension will dissolve, but the underlying dynamic around inadequacy, both its ontological forms and biographical expressions, will presumably continue to persist. Some facets of inadequacy are simply much larger than your historical experience and the narratives that surround these experiences. Here are two of the essential points relevant for our exploration of inadequacy. First, if you happen to consolidate an identity around not being okay, which is in the habit of forming a covert or explicit conflict with being okay, you are likely avoiding and inhibiting how you can grow and perhaps exceed the various demands of life. In contrast, if you happen to consolidate an identity around being okay, you are likely acting out a covert or explicit habit of keeping yourself from experiencing yourself as inadequate. In both cases, the self organizes itself inside of the opposition of polarity. Both forms are conventional forms of struggle with inadequacy, although their surface features and appearances are quite different. One appears immensely confident, while the other appears quite stuck in inadequacy. Both of these oppositional postures toward the other polarity contract your contact with an ongoing experiential flux capable of creating a more complex, developed you. By consolidating a separate and autonomous self distinct from this moment, which is also in a chronic conflict with one side of this polarity, you forfeit your larger, more developed self that is embracing the dichotomous and polar dynamics already occurring in a larger experiential context. Inside this larger context, beneath the more habituated constructions of self, there is an ongoing, perhaps unresolvable, energetic exchange occurring. On one side of this experiential flux, we find an ever-present inadequacy born from the ontological status of being an expression of a limited form, which commingles with your biographical narrative at times. On the other side, we find the radical okayness inherent as the unconditioned, limitless, and formless facets of experience, which appears to be continually drawing form into greater, more complex, and competent expressions of form, or perhaps inspiring form, to exceed the constraints and limitations of any position. The function of elegance. Inadequacy and the drive to grow, to exceed and go beyond are, we might say, not to. The experience of inadequacy is not separate from the drive for growth and development. Human elegance joins these two poles together. Your elegance turns toward your inadequacies, welcomes them into their full experiential intensity, and, in doing so, connects this vital energy into a powerful drive to develop. Similarly, the drive to develop is not something to leverage as a means to get out of inadequacy, as the autonomous self often attempts to do. Elegance grows not as an attempt to get out of inadequacy, but instead as a function of magnifying and celebrating your limitedness. Elegance enables you to be both inadequate and competent as an inherent movement toward becoming more. This is a function of the dignity of elegance. Additionally, elegance is a function of an inclusion of precisely that which is unconditioned. This embrace of the eternal or infinite enables elegance to also rest as inadequacy and not habitually need to become anything else or more. This is one of the unique features of elegance. It is not necessarily invested in getting rid of any facet of experience that is already present. Elegance often functions as an ingenious and simple functional integration of polarity that creatively responds to and as immediacy again and again. In closing, the conventional attempts to consolidate a separate, self-governing, autonomous self can entrench you, your life, and your unique purpose into a pervasive mediocrity. Whether you consolidate yourself into a presumably highly achieving and competent autonomous self, judged from the reference point of other similarly autonomous selves, this self is likely shackled to a conditioning that avoids experiencing the direct embodied energy of inadequacy. Alternatively, you might happen to construct a project of defining yourself as being inadequate, again, in reference to other conventional selves, and in doing so, avoid the more unmediated experiential intensity of your greatness. In either case, the options are mediocrity or more mediocrity, both of which are governed by autonomy's constraints. Two ingredients are essential for going beyond the inherent mediocrity of your autonomous self. The first is courage. Can you participate with an inherent courage to go beyond the commonly habituated struggle that opposes one side of this polarity? Structuring a self on a pervasive and systemic avoidance of one side of a polarity often creates the need for courage. Can you step into the experiential intensity and consciously welcome the anxiety and dysregulation when you do the counter-instinctual move of moving toward that which you have been fundamentally organized around avoiding? To do so, you must risk that which you could call home to your sense of identity. Can you do this? The answer for many functioning from the self-authoring mind is yes. However, will you step into this challenge and begin to integrate the experiential intensity of stepping outside of your comfort zone? Most autonomous functioning adults fail here. The risk is often too much from their limited perspective. As such, we often find the separate autonomous self creating a culture amongst other like-minded individuals. They often collude with one another, many times non-verbally and unknowingly, about what form of achievements are to be praised, celebrated, and cultivated, and which ones are to be collectively unchallenged. The self-authoring mind establishes its own gradation of perceived value. Yet from the larger vantage point of the honors curriculum of adult development, the autonomous self is functionally confined to a mediocrity. Yes, some mediocrity is better than others. However, the defining features of average are just that, average. If developmental testing is any indication, it does appear that most presumably distinct autonomous functioning adults fail to embrace the courage to participate in a larger movement of the developing mind. This is, in part, caused by an ignorance of any further developmental complexity beyond autonomy. Courage is, however, one of the few actions your autonomous functioning does have as an option. And it is likely the easier of the two identified here. The second ingredient is surrender. Surrender, as elucidated in my book Strength to Awaken, is not a form of giving up. It is a relinquishment of your often unexamined fixation in and compulsion to autonomous control. However, surrender paradoxically increases your functional capacities for control. Surrender can be thought of as a letting go. This letting go is something you, your autonomous self, participates with and is also something that the immediacy of the present moment does to you. It is the latter part of this equation that is perhaps most essential, as it reflects a larger, more mature trust in immediacy. Surrendering your separate and distinct position is something your separateness cannot ultimately do, and this would only heighten and accent the already differentiated autonomy. Surrender involves, at least in part, a welcoming of an experiential flux that is profoundly embedded in an interpenetrating relatedness to and as immediacy. This is the fertile ground of your human elegance. Exercises to investigate inadequacy anew. 1. Explore your biographical stories of inadequacy. A. What are your most influential historical experiences that have created a sense of being inadequate? B. How have these experiences influenced the identity largely given to you through the socialized mind? C. How do these experiences impact the identity you author and activity you construct as a self-functioning in the self-authoring mind? 2. Investigate the ontological presence of inadequacy. Sense into how perhaps there is always more. A. This week, where are you falling short in your life? B. Scanning your present life, how are you being challenged to grow right now in this moment? C. In the area or areas where you have the most amount of competence, what are the limitations you feel must be exceeded?